Hey everyone, and welcome. First ever episode of Talk AOS, Talk Age of Sigmar, where we specifically talk about Age of Sigmar and its lore, its merchandise, things we like, things we don't like. But first, let me go ahead and introduce myself. My name is Cabby, and my co-host here, you know him from the Hobby Knockout podcast. Everyone, welcome Dan.
Hello, everybody.
All right, so if Dan sounds funny, it's because he's actually five states away from me. And we talk about this stuff so often, in fact, that we just decided to record it. So yep, here we are, and you get to be the wonderful first viewers, or listeners, per se.
I'll say, kind of hard to view voice, sound waves.
You know what, but I bet you there are some people that do that just for fun. So Dan's talked a little bit about it on his other podcast and all of that, but specifically they go over a slew of tabletop games, and not just Age of Sigmar or 40K, but other things like Dracula's America and all that. But here we specifically want to talk about Age of Sigmar and all of its awesomeness and all that. So Dan, could you give us like a small rundown of the lore of the end of the old world coming into Age of Sigmar and what it specifically is?
Oh, you mean like go back in time to another age when there used to be a land of things called dwarves and elves and men.
Right, and now it's Dwarden and elves and ogres and things like that.
Right.
The battle of gods and monsters.
Yeah, went from being battles between men and beasts to now gods and monsters.
Which is just as cool, but yeah.
It's definitely very different. The world that was, it's a kind of a broad topic, and we'll take some time to discuss for us to like chew through this, because the world that was, like, it's almost a typical fantasy setting. Like, it had, like, you know, spanning continents, an empire of mankind, a dwarven empire, an elven nation that's been fractured by civil war, so there were dark elves and, you know, regular elves. Like, I'm not quite sure why they decided to call them dark elves, but they did. Right, like, and then they were ogres in their kingdom itself. They were mercenaries that kind of like could get hired out to anybody. They, you know, it was just orcs were just rampaging everywhere, beastmen and chaos coming from the north. Like, it was a world that like so tightly packed full of races. It's a wonder no one destroyed each other. You know, it's a wonder the end times didn't actually happen sooner.
Right. Well, and now you wonder why. You know, you can't wonder why lizard men ran to an island and just stayed there. And was just like, no, I don't want any part of that nonsense on the main island.
Yeah, those remind me of the part of their, like, South America bit there. And it's also, like, with you know, Games Workshop, you know, coming out in, like, the 80s, late 70s, early 80s, there was many, many years of lore behind this world they created. People fell in love with their armies throughout these ages. People will still be able to recall, you know, which edition model they have and when they actually started. Which is what made the end times such an awesome moment, but also like a cataclysmic disaster as well.
Right, yeah. Everyone's armies were factioned, you know, into these just tiny, tiny, like little 3 to 4 unit forces. They no longer had access to everything.
After the end times, yeah. The end times, like when the first books started coming out, being labeled the end times, like, it was this massive campaign that was happening, and people were shocked that characters were suddenly getting killed, but they were also ecstatic because they're like, oh, the story's finally going to move forward towards the end of the end times. And Games Workshop came out and published that, all right, we have these books, this will be the end times, and there will be change coming upon the last book. So everybody eagerly awaited. They were loving it. They were super excited. This is where we saw the Glotkin come out. This is where we saw the Putrid Bloodlords come out. Wrathmonger, some of the cooler kits that survived this day for AOS, for Chaos, came out during this time. Those were Thangul and Bone Ripper first came out as well. They came out with a new sculpt for him too. So like, you got some badass models that came out during this age, and people were super excited about where the direction of the story was going.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I remember eagerly waiting for the new edition to come out and all that. And you know, as you know, I play Nurgle, specifically Mortals and things like that. And then they came out, you know, the Putrid Blight Kings. So I was just like, what else awesome are they going to come out with?
Right? I saw those Wrathmongers and I'm like, yep.
give me like 20 of those.
they look like they're jump roping chains with hammers in the end. But you know what? They were movement. There was movement in those models that was not previously seen in Warhammer Fantasy Battles. Because the game is like tightly regimented in packs, for those of you who don't know, like each unit is like tightly packed 5x5 block of models, you know, in there. So they had to fit on their bases a certain way. So there's a reason why if you're not familiar with the old world and your fans made Sigmar, if you look at a lot of the older armies, a lot of the models when you build them aren't as dynamic. They're kind of almost samey in feel. But that's because they had to fit up and rank up together, you know, beforehand. And now, you know, the Wrathmongers and the Blight Kings were the first I ever seen that like had movement in them. And it was super cool. It was exciting. It was super exciting.
Oh yeah. You know, oh yeah, you know, definitely definitely better than just, you know, all of your spearmen with the spears up and the shields close to them and things like that. The Blight Kings had like these massive scythes that they were getting ready to swing, and
it's pretty cool. It was super awesome. And I should say until the last book came out. People were excited until that last book. You know, that last book, they actually talk about the world actually ending, and Archaon, you know, Grand Lord of Chaos, actually won the day. And the last page of the book is Alariel and I think Anarion on there, you know, Belkis or Beleriand, or things calling Beleriand at that point.
Right. Yeah. He finally got his crown as the Phoenix King, and he went by his original name. Yeah.
Yep. And they were holding hands as the world went black, and that was it. That was the end. And people were like, "All right, what's happening now?" So now we're getting to the early ages of, you know, early time of Age of Sigmar, what is now being known to and referred to in the books, and all that, is the Age of Myth. Like now we're reaching that point there, because that's when I remember getting the announcement that new rules coming, every army will be updated. You need to buy any army book now, every army is going to be updated to fit this new rule system. All the rules are going to be free. I remember waiting, you know, bated breath as I received the downloads and opened them up. And I was like, what am I looking at?
Yeah, it was... and so...
I love the War Scrolls. Like, I read them, I'm like, oh my gosh, each unit has flavor. That's really cool. Oh man, let's take a look over here. Oh my gosh, their units are doing some really cool things, and they kept them all. All the guys are in this. Wood Elves, Dark Elves, you know, all the factions are here. All right, well, look at the rulebook now. 4 pages. All right, how
am I building
an army?
It was like, okay, well, how many points is everything? What do you mean there's no point values?
Nothing. Bring your collection is what they said at first. And it was like, oh, okay. Now, I'm a narrative player, okay? I can talk shop when it comes to the tournament scene. I've played in many, many, many tournaments. But I do like whenever I build an army, there's got to be a bit of narrative structure to my game. So when I'm, especially if I'm playing casually with my friends and all that, and so for me, I was like, oh, this is not a problem. I'll just have a conversation with, you know, Chris here, and we'll talk. We'll hatch a story out. We'll come together to make our game competitive, you know, because that's something I was used to doing. You know, used to doing. Period. With a narrative game, but like the community itself had no clue how to do this, and so you had people showing up with like Nagash and thousands of skeletons against a guy who had a small force, maybe, you know, 10 Blight Kings and a champion in the end times. That's it. And he'd get destroyed by this huge, massive army because it said, bring whatever you want. It was almost like Games Workshop was like, cool, we're going to focus on building these miniatures. You as a community figure out how to play.
Yeah.
Or I guess you should know how to play.
Right. One of my favorite things was watching a game, and the guy was like, well, I mean, if we're just taking what we have, why would I ever take my High Elf Spearmen again? I'm just going to throw in a bunch of Phoenix Guard and, you know, these are comparable, right? Right? We're like, what? No?
Oh my gosh, then we had to do our own comps. But the community started being like, let's make our own comp. And the comp essentially is like your own point system, your own way to play. And so for a while there, we were using wounds. Chris and I, like after a long discussion, realized that wounds were not actually accurate to make a balanced army because they weren't equal. The models were still not equal. For example, Chaos Warriors were 2 wounds each, and my dwarf, you know, Ironbreakers were 1 wound each. I could take a bunch of Ironbreakers, you could take half as many Chaos Warriors, and Ironbreakers would actually beat them down every time.
Right, and when he says we talked about it, it occurred after a game where he was playing Sylvaneth versus my Chaos, and he laughs because we did the wounds, and he took three Tree Lords in that game. And we weren't really thinking much of it. Dan is not that kind of player to like min-max against somebody or anybody, anything like that. He was just like, well, I have three Tree Lords. It's only 12 wounds apiece. Yeah, sure, let's do this. And it was a beating I will never forget.
Right, well, if you think about it, like, that's six Chaos Warriors.
Right.
Against a Tree Lord.
Yeah, slash, you know, Spirit of Durthu, which also had 12 wounds. And,
right.
You know, after that, we had a great laugh about the massacre that occurred on one side of the field.
Chris cried a lot. You were like, this is bullshit. And then I was like, you know what, you're right, this is bullshit. And then we laughed.
Okay, there was a bit of a heartbreak there for a little bit, but...
Well, it was the first time so I remember that game very clearly as well. Like, the first time you just got some spawn, I'm sorry, beasts of Nurgle that you converted.
Oh, God. I was so proud of them.
D&D worms, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you found these models for them. You converted them up. You brought them out there to play. They just got ruffle stomped by some tree lords being like, let's team up, guys. Wonder Tree Power activate. And, yeah.
I still, to this day, I have no idea what the Beasts of Nurgle do. Like, they moved and were obliterated. I think two of them died in the shooting phase from the tendrils. And then the other one was just slapped into... He was atomized by another Tree Lord. Like, I was like, well, that was fun.
Yeah, you were like, can we play again?
Yeah. I was like, oh, let me get these out of your way.
Meanwhile, we're not even talking about death, because, like... you know, my son plays Death, and so he would run Undead. I remember Chris watching a game we were running. Chris was playing against Death, and once again, it's all wounds. So he took a bunch of Skeleton Warriors, and Chris was playing as Chaos. He had a bunch of Chaos Warriors and all that there as well. And what I just remember most was you hit that block of Chaos. Chaos Warriors. Those Chaos Warriors hit that block of Skeletons, and he kept being like, "Yep, D6 come back, D6 come back," because the way the rules mechanics worked for Death was. The banner in each unit returned D6 models to that unit. So he was rolling above average, just getting six models back a turn, you know, and so it's almost like he fought like three, four times his number because the undead just kept replenishing himself.
Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah,
it was fun.
That was fun too.
That was fun.
And I was like, wow, you know, Chaos won, you know. Remember, you know, the world ended because Chaos won. I wasn't feeling it at the moment.
Well, it's Age of Sigmar now, so.
Yeah.
But, so the community came out with some comps, but it wasn't until, like, a short time later when the community, when Games Workshop announced, well, maybe we made a mistake, and brought out the Grand, announced that, but they were like, we're going to bring up these Grand Alliances. And it kind of split the armies up a little bit, even further into sub-factions. We did out those units that were kind of redundant. And in some cases, eliminated whole factions that couldn't control their IP with, like the Bretonians, which look a lot like French knights. There's no way they can copyright those guys because they look too much like historicals and to actually like gain control of their IP. So instead, they just eliminated them from the line. You know, you still use them. They still have points out there that you can play with. But at this point in time, we all started to notice certain things are going bye-bye.
and it's. You know, for those that play the factions, it's sad. For those that maybe had a grudge against those factions, they're like, yeah, take that, your stupid lance formation. But the more and more that we play this and we dive into, you know, the setting that they're trying to create for Age of Sigmar, you kind of just, you accept it. Like, you go, okay, I get it.
It took a year for that to happen, though. It took a year of playing a game with no points. For them to finally be like, well, we need to actually have this implemented. It took a year of just that dark age before we saw some light at the end of the tunnel. And during this time, they brought out probably the coolest books, which was the Realmgate War books. And I'm not talking about the novels either. They're actual game books. And this was my first taste of what Stormcast were. So I'm reading through it, and it's like talking about the war with Stormcast and Nurgle and Ilariel's Realm of Life. And like, I got an idea of what the realms were, but like, it didn't really actually say. Like, it was our first taste of the setting of the game. And for me, it was exciting. I loved it. I was like, oh my gosh, this is really cool. I read those books. I'll get them all. They're $70 books. I own all five of them. So I don't even want to talk about that cost. So
yeah, I own two and called Dan, and Dan was like, yeah, I totally got the other ones. I was like, oh, thank God. I can't. I'll borrow them.
They did a lot of cool things in there that kind of led to where we're at currently in Age of Sigmar. Like, they had artifacts that you could use in there. If you're playing in that particular realm or that reenacting that battle narratively, you could use these artifacts. I was like, oh, the first time that artifacts were introduced to the game. All right. And so, like, there was that in there. They were doing command abilities as well. This is before only your general could use a command ability, right? And only, you know, so there was no command points at this point in the game. And so you had to be very careful who you chose as your general. Had more meaning than what it kind of does now.
Right.
And so it was really exciting to see these books. But, like, they're in this limbo of no points. So, like, they're completely overlooked. And I recommend to anyone out there who loves Age of Sigmar, find these books. I'm sure you can find some now, any and use. And they will add a lot to your narrative, right? As well as just the story itself.
Right, yeah. There's a lot of them that really, like, if you're a big Nurgle fan and all that, there's all sorts of cool lore about the Maggoth Lords and the Glotkin themselves, your Spume and things like that, moving through the realm of life. All of that's in there. Archaon finding these massive cosmic creatures and all that, trying to harness their power. It was stuff like you've heard of these mythological creatures and all that back in the old world, but this really made them tangible. You know, the god beast dragon that the dwarves themselves chained down with, you know, enchanted chains and all that to keep it. Yeah.
That's really good. And it's the first time I realized this was when Chris and I just had this massive discussion on this too. When I realized that Age of Sigmar was not about, you know, men on the ground anymore and infantry in that way. It's about, essentially, it's like a mythology. It's like gods and men walking amongst gods and monsters, and how they survive, how they interact, how they fight and battle each other. And it's a whole new scale of, like, game, as far as, like, game presence. And I kind of like it, because I can take things to a whole another level. You can have, like, you know, stone golems walking around now in this world, where the old world was really limited to the world itself. Like, so a feeling like a god beast in that setting would just wreck everything, the world would be over.
Right, yeah.
Sigmar, it can still wreck a lot of stuff, but it can move between the realms. So that kind of gives you more to play with.
Right, yeah. And like you said, real customization to your characters and things like that. It wasn't just, you know, oh, I follow Tzeentch, so now I'm blue, or I follow Khorne, I'm red.
Right.
You know, it gave to where you were now doing realm-specific things with your guys. And you know, it allowed for, you know, I think bases are one of the most important parts of your model. If your base looks really good, it adds to your model. And, you know, being like, oh, well, I'm from the realm of fire. And, you know, you do up your bases in lava or arid deserts and things like that. It really added a lot to the figures. Not just like the old world where you're like, oh, I play Chaos, so I'm from the winter north. So here's my scorched base or my ice base, and you called it good. It was fantastic and things like that to get this.
40K, yeah, but 40K kind of had this advantage because like their planets all across the universe. You could have very similar to what AOS has now. They could have scorched worlds. They could have worlds of ice. They could have worlds that are jungle and base. Like, they had the ability to do this really unique thing and make their armies from any world they want, whatever their imagination entailed. Warhammer Fantasy Battles didn't necessarily have that. Some people liked that it didn't have that. I personally found it limiting. Like, I didn't realize how limiting it was until I had Liberation with Age of Sigmar. So to see it kind of open up into being able to do pretty much whatever I want more freely within the confines of the narrative was liberating.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, for our listeners there and all that, Dan and I are very similar in the idea of we love converting our own models, you know, taking pieces from this and that and building our own looking items and things like that. Dan, more than me, he can achieve that through a paint job as well. So, you know, Dan, you've done some really cool stuff with, what was it, the Frosthorn. The Stonehorn. The Stonehorn from the Ogor's force and all that, and did this beautiful ice effect across the, instead of doing the stone and the bone color and all that, did this beautiful ice effect. And then it was able to match the actual, like, the ground that he did, the characters, and it really brought these models to life.
Oh, yeah. I agree with you. Like, yeah, when you can do that, when you have the ability to be able to do that, let loose your imagination. Like, it does a lot for it. And it was fun to see the realms. I'm glad they fleshed out the realms since then. But General's Handbook, the first General's Handbook didn't come out until almost, like, I think a year after those books had come out.
Correct.
And then we finally got points. Finally some structure. And then... And it's just all moving towards where we're at now, where AOS 2 then came out and kind of refined some of the rules a little bit. And then now the newest General's Handbook came out that kind of refined some of the points a little bit more. So we're in a good place as a game.
Yeah, I think so too.
We're in a really good place.
You know, it was cool because, you know, we were talking about how the lack of structure. Well, now it's, you know, you have to have your general, which is a hero, and then you have to have two battle line minimum for a certain amount of points and things like that. You can only have a max of so many artillery or behemoths, your giant creatures and things like that. And that was good. It eliminated things like, you know, small points games and three tree lords. Again, I'm not salty about that. It just is what it is.
He's salty.
Oh my god. Yeah, my cholesterol is so high just because of that game. But,
I'm just telling you, man, anytime you play Silver Death, they still bring three tree lords now. So, it's what they do.
It's just what they do, yeah. But, I mean, at least their structure, I can go, you know what?
Sure.
You fit it in right, I guess. That's totally fine. Like, alright. So, the other day, I ended up fighting five tree lords and a Lariel at the same time. That was a nightmare. I enjoyed it, but...
Did you?
No.
Did you really enjoy it?
I did not. That game was awful.
Well, man, that's kind of a nightmare for any player, though. Like, he's, by the way, folks out there, he's playing a 2,500-point game, so it wasn't like they were playing the 1,000, 1,500, even 2,000 points. They were playing 2,500 points to fit all that nonsense in there, so... and I believe you were playing Moon Clan as well? You're playing the Gits?
Yes, I was. I was playing a squig-focused army with a little bit of Tarmogoyf support.
You're already hard-pressed to win that fight.
Yeah, I don't want to say I was at a disadvantage, but I was at a disadvantage.
You were.
Oh, it was those poor squigs were like baseballs being just swatted out into the outfield the whole game.
I mean, a goddess essentially there being like, what's up, guys? What's this?
Oh my gosh, yeah, she's like, do you have healing spells? Because I do. It's been cool. I totally agree with Dan. We are in a great place with Age of Sigmar right now. They had it was a terrible release for them.
It was bad.
Those Realmgate books that he's talking about and all that really started to add something to it, because we had no idea what was going on. Actually, I feel like up until like this last year, we really still didn't have a good idea what the realms were. Were they worlds? Were they, flat Earth kind of things and things like that?
I still hate that they're flat Earth. Yeah, you heard me say it out there. I like where we're at. I hate the flat Earth theory. I just don't like it.
Yeah.
But that's just me personally. But
I agree. I like to think of them as just giant magical sphere worlds out there, and the space in between is this ether space, which is, you know, just the magical clouds that couldn't form into anything solid, and that's what the Caradhron overlords, which are these like steampunk dwarves, sail across all Treasure Planet style.
Yep. Also connects them to different realms that sail the realm.
Right, we have our Stargate portals, which are the realm gates. You basically tune them into the other ones, and you get to pop out on the other side, all fourth dimension like. There's a lot of really cool things and all that about it. Unfortunately, they are flat Earth theory things that are all weirdly layered together. I don't know. It's a mess. Come up with your own fun lore for it.
It's weird. The more they've tried to explain how their world works, and I give them applause for trying. However, the weirder and kind of like, the less I can suspend my disbelief on it, because like this doesn't seem to make sense. But...
Yeah, yeah.
In this case, it's what the writers are doing, and at least they're attempting to create a world. I'm gonna put that positive spin on it. But I mean, ultimately, I don't like the Flat Earth part of it. That's just my personal opinion.
Right. Ultimately, it's their story, their game.
Yep.
They can do what they want with it. The cool thing is, though, is that there's so much room for you guys to come up with your own types of story. Again,
yep.
I believe all of the main powers of magic, whether it's death, light, beast, things like that, I believe all that power got released and created worlds specific to them. And you get to fly or swim or sail through the ether that is between them. I find that more appealing to my taste for the story. Some of you out there might like the different layers. You're big D&D fans or Magic the Gathering fans, and that's kind of how that works.
Right. Planescape fans. Anybody who knows a little bit multi-realm, you know, or multiverse type of thing, like plays games like that, will find themselves right at home in the settings.
Right, yeah. And if you like it, more power to you guys. That's the great thing about this hobby is you get to do what you'd like to do in it.
Absolutely.
If you listen to the Hobby Knockout podcast, you know, the other one I said that Dan is on and all that, traditionally they have a thing that they start off the episode with, but we kind of just wanted to give a little bit of what Age of Sigmar is, what to expect on this and all that. And the tradition is hobby time. I'd like to go ahead and do that, you know, real quick to kind of finish off this episode. We're going to tie this one up. I think we should tie this one up a little bit. And then I can bend your ear more as we go along with longer episodes and things like that. Dan, what have you been working on here lately in regards to your, you know, Age of Sigmar hobby?
In regards to my Age of Sigmar hobby, I've been painting Beastmen, painting Ungors for a friend, kind of like a commission paint thing. He was so kind to give me a bunch of contrast paints and an elf dragon. I decided to paint up like 40 Ungors for him. So right now, the Ungors I'm working on have this like ashen skin. I found a picture I liked in the Beast of Chaos book that was kind of like grayish brown. And so I'm trying to emulate those colors on them right then and there. So they're like standing on rocks. I'm going to have my thing in the swamp. It was like a swampy bases when I get done with it. The base right now is still kind of a concept. I don't necessarily know what I'm going to do yet until I start working on it. But right now it's getting that ashen skin to look right, with the secondary color being like red leather for like their shields and such. Thinking about even going as far as adding war paint after I paint the fur up to see if I need that extra touch on them or not. So it's Beastmen, man. Ungors. How many of them?
Awful. I mean, you know, yes. Coming from the guy that owned a bunch of them and then never painted them. So,
They are not fun. They are pot-bellied little imps, all right, pretty much.
Right. Yeah, that's honestly the best way to put it. But that sounds like a really cool color scheme. Is the guy going for the, what are they called? The Deep Stalkers?
No idea. He was just like, paint them how you want. And I'm like, okay.
Oh, nice. Even better. Oh, man, that's the best part, you know. Giving the guy that's painting for you the freedom.
Right. When they trust me enough to say, hey, go ahead and paint them how you want.
And, you know, hopefully we'll get some pictures of that up and all that on our Instagrams and all that. If you actually go to the Hobby Knockout Instagram page and go all the way back to the first pictures and all that, you'll actually see a lot of the pictures on there that Dan's done of his models. I know his Dispossessed is on there.
Yep.
I think the Orc War Boss Maw Crushers on there.
Yep.
That's the Stonehorn that I had mentioned earlier should be on there. We have another Instagram that's going to be going up. I'm going to be, I got to get some things changed around on it first, but that will be coming to you as well. And I know that I have those pictures on there. So check out the other ones first, and then I'll get back to you on the next episode with that. But as far as me, something we're going to go over in another episode is the Michigan GT. So I have been feverishly preparing for that because unlike Dan, I paint like a model a day, which honestly is not a bad way to go. But Dan paints like 40 in a day, so
I could.
He could. He's done it. this isn't an I could kind of thing. I told him one time I was coming up to game with him. He was like, okay, and he painted an army in the 5 days that I was waiting to come up. But for the GT, I'm playing Heat Knights of Slaanesh. I've been messing around with a lot of conversions for that. So for me, it's been my spawn with the Mark of Slaanesh. I've been working on those. Dan and I were talking just a little bit before we started this up that I tried doing a crystal look for my guys, and I put a little art code on it. And I gotta say, he looks like a hot mess. We'll be receiving the spray can again here shortly. But in the meantime, I got a new Demon Prince built up, and even got my hands on a Keeper of Secrets and got her all built up.
You're gonna be busy, buddy.
Yeah, but see, I gotta start now, because...
Right? Oh, I get it. I got some Chaos Knights for you, too. I gotta send your way, so...
Oh, yes, brilliant. I think that that brought me up to, what, 35 Chaos Knights mixed together?
Yeah, a bunch of Chaos Knights to run forward with Slaanesh markings.
Yay, I'm so excited that we finally figured a use for those awesome models. Oh, man. They're so fun. They're so fun. Yeah, so plenty of more projects coming up. Anytime you hear the hobby time coming from me, probably going to be the Heat Knights of Slaanesh with a little bit of extra stuff dabbled in there to break up the monotony. Stay tuned for the, you know, next week. Dan will be working on his next project. You know what's funny is we mess with him on that, but he keeps proving us right. So we're just going to keep bringing it up.
Right. And I think next week you had planned talking about Heat Knights of Slaanesh a little bit more in detail, so we'll actually talk about your theory on this army you're crafting as well.
Yes, and you know, on that one, I've got another player here with me in I live in Atlanta, Georgia, but I'm currently down here in Savannah working and all that, so I got a buddy down here that is hardcore into his Heat Knights of Slaanesh. I'm hoping to get him on the show with us next week. So definitely stay tuned for that. I'm super excited to talk about it because so much of the lore has finally just been flushed out for this. For those of you that don't know, Slaanesh is one of the demons of chaos, and it always used to be about lewdness.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. That is... Yes, that is the best way to do it. And we finally, in this new book, flushed out some stuff. So it's no longer, it's still about sex, drugs, and rock and roll, but there is more to it now. But we're going to get into that next week. This has been absolutely fantastic. Like I said, we're going to do it a little bit shorter this week just to kind of give you an intro into Age of Sigmar. We want to give you guys a chance to go through, pick up those Realmgate books that Dan was talking about. Jump on Wikipedia. Feel free to leave us a comment here underneath the podcast title and all that, and ask us some of the questions that, you know, maybe you did look up the stuff and you just couldn't find the information for, or maybe you just want to ask us an off the wall question about Age of Sigmar. We'd be more than happy to answer those as best as we can. So thank you very much for joining us for the first ever episode. You can find us here on Podbean. And Dan, we're going to give the other show a plug as well.
Absolutely. Join me and my co-host Matt at Hobby Knockout. And join and like us on Facebook. We're on podcasts as well, Twitter, all that. So check us out.
Yeah.
Instagram, yeah. Follow our Instagram. Yeah. Can't forget that either. So yeah, check us out as well. And there we talk about all things hobby. We talk about different types of things to use product-wise, different games to play, and Age of Sigmar as well. So... We plug Age of Sigmar not as much as what we're going to do here. Here's all Age of Sigmar content, so...
Yes, and definitely go back through the backlog of the episodes. There's an entire episode on terrain, which is... You can use for any game, Age of Sigmar 2 and all that. Alternative models, which are really good to use for it. So, yeah, by all means, please check out both of those. Give us a like, give it a share and a comment. And we're going to catch you next week. All right, guys, take care.
Take care.